I'm just starting to broadcast audio now.
All right. You overrode me. I've got silence.
Okay, so should be coming up in a moment. You'll hear me talk, and then you should end up having some music come up.
Let me tell you the story of 100 ships traversing the great big sea. Moving the riches of the world in large ships owned by the captains of industry. They were heading to places like Amsterdam.
Oh, did you see this latest
London
line from Bill Maher?
And LA.
How the Democrats are now the Republicans, and the Republicans are in a mental institution?
Yeah, Democrats have moved to the right, and the right has moved into a mental hospital.
He's got it nailed, man. There's a reason why he's one of my favorites out there. I mean, I'm part of thousands that continue to follow the Tullycast man all over YouTube. Like, every week he has to get a new account. We're up to Tullycast 17. And every week he gets the current Bill Maher show up, and it lasts about 4 days. Have you been getting any of this broadcast yet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I chase Tullycast around YouTube, too.
Okay, but I mean, what I'm sending, have you heard me on
the screen? Oh, no, I've got nothing.
Nothing. I'm showing ascending. Did you need to restart your player with the boot off?
Maybe that's what I need to do. Hold on.
Okay. Restarting my music.
Let me tell you.
By way of, ladies and gentlemen, this is a test of the Head On Radio Network remote broadcast system. We now return you to your regular broadcasting.
Right off the boat from Finland, you live in the land of the free. He was working at a mother, sweating in the sun.
America better. The Rick Smith Show. Progressive talk with a conscience.
A new report by a small business industry group out in Buffalo, New York shows higher than expected support from small business owners for quality public health insurance. The report from the New York Small Business United for Healthcare group indicates surprising levels of support for a public option. Key findings, 63% of the respondents say that they're willing to contribute financially to achieve quality, affordable health care for their employees, while only 9% said they were not. 67% were indicated a willingness to contribute up to 7% of their total payroll costs to guarantee their workers' health care coverage. Among the self-employed entrepreneurs, 76% expressed interest in buying into a statewide or national healthcare pool. So this has all been set. I mean, there's good stuff here. And as I've said a number of times on this program, if we could just take healthcare off the backs of business owners, we are going to create an environment friendly to entrepreneurs. We're going to start encouraging people to start their own small businesses. And that's why I've asked John Arnmeyer, CEO of Small Business Majority, their website, smallbusinessmajority.org, come on and talk to us. John, welcome to the program.
Eric, how are you? Good to be here.
I appreciate you taking time for me. Tell me a little bit about Small Business Majority.
Small Business Majority is an organization founded and run by small business owners, and we are focused on, you know, the public policy issues that are most important to business, and right now to small business, and right now that is healthcare. Healthcare costs are just killing small businesses. The ability for small businesses to offer health care is dropping precipitously. And all the polling we do in states across the country, small business owners say that the single biggest reason they are not able to offer health care if they're not doing it is cost. And if they are offering it, the single biggest fear they have is that they won't be able to keep doing it.
You know, I look at this this survey done up in New York that I just talked about.
Right.
And are you seeing similar numbers in your polling data?
Absolutely. We have polled nationally, and we've polled in about 18 states across the country. And the numbers are strikingly similar, no matter where we poll, red state, blue state, purple state, it doesn't matter. Basically, small businesses want this problem solved now. The problem is out of control. The current system is unsustainable. And as you suggest, they are willing to be part of the solution. Fully 66% of small businesses we poll support the concept of shared responsibility in solving the problem. And a majority do support, as your previous statement indicated, that they are willing to pay something into the system to in order to assure that they and their employees can get quality, affordable health care.
You know, I look at the idea of just taking health care off the backs of business and allowing them to do what they set out to do. I've got friends who run small businesses, and, you know, like you said, they want to offer health insurance. It's time-consuming, though, to go through all the plans. It's time-consuming to administer all this stuff. What kind of environment would we be creating for people if they didn't have to worry about that?
As you suggest, we'd be creating an environment that's much healthier for running a business. As you suggest, what we need to worry about as small business owners is our product, our services, our customers, our employees, and not worry about something that, A, we don't have any expertise in, healthcare, and B, something that we don't have time to manage, and C, that we don't have control over. It's the biggest aspect in a small business owner's life that they have to worry about, that we've got no control over it. You find out, oh, my health insurance is going up 15% this year. I mean, it's nothing you've done, it's nothing about your business. It's just something, and you have no say in the matter. So the more that we can remove health care as a factor in running businesses and just have it be there as something that everybody has, the far better our economy is going to be, the far quicker we're going to pull out of this recession. The small business always leads the way coming out of a recession, and the better off we're all going to be.
You know, that 15%, good luck getting that 15% out of your customers raising your prices. Good luck on that.
it's more than that, actually. And actually, small business pays 18% more than everyone else for health care in general. So it's absolutely unsustainable. And as we've both said, small businesses are more than willing to be part of the solution to step up to the plate to fix the problem.
Okay, so we agree. System's broken. Something has to be done. Let's see if we can agree on what direction we go with what needs to be done. What do you see as a solution?
Well, I mean, we're operating within the context of what has been proposed by President Obama and is being considered in the U.S. Congress right now. And within that, you know, and we think it's a framework that is definitely workable. It's a framework that where there's tremendous cost containment provisions in the system. Some of those will happen fairly quickly, and some of those will take time. There's almost all the proposals that are kicking around are for an insurance exchange, where small businesses and their employees have access to transparent information about healthcare plans. You talked about the public option. Our polling shows that the small businesses, just like everyone else in the country, support the idea of a option of a public plan as a choice with private plans. And an exchange where there are tax credits and subsidies for those who can't afford the insurance, and in exchange for that, there's a requirement that all individuals and all businesses be part of the system. We've just done a huge research study the research was done by Jonathan Gruber, professor at MIT, and we just put out a report last week, which shows that a system of shared responsibility that is properly constructed, where there are tax credits, where there is a sliding scale for what small businesses are going to have to pay into the system based on their payroll, based on number of employees, that is going to be far better than the status quo. That the status quo right now, over the next 10 years, small businesses will be hit with $2.4 trillion in healthcare costs, and we can cut that by $855 billion with a version of the system that is being kicked around in Congress right now that does require, that does involve some shared responsibility, but it will, where that's done responsibly.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with John Ehrensmeyer. He's the CEO of Small Business Majority. Again, their website is smallbusinessmajority.org. You can get there from our website at therickSmithShow.com. Just click on John's name. Take you right there. You know, what I've been talking about on the program is basically a single-payer option. We need to get small businesses, large businesses, to stop having to be, stop being forced into the medical industry, into the health insurance industry. I think on a global scale, it would help this country be more competitive. I'm curious as to your thoughts.
Well, we have really focused our energies on figuring out how the current legislation that's being considered can be done in such a way to maximize the benefits of small business. So to be honest with you, single payer is not a realistic option in Congress this year. And therefore, we focus our energy on trying to make the options that are being considered now work as best as possible. So, any solution is going to be like this, like what's being considered, like single payer is going to be better than the status quo. But we are willing and eager to work to make the proposals that the Obama administration has made and being considered in Congress now work. If this doesn't work, God forbid, then, I think all options will be back on the table. But I think we can make what has been proposed work. And I think it will be a tremendous improvement, to say the least, to what we have. So we have not actively engaged this year in single-payer debate as a result of that.
Right. Okay. So let's say there were some people, local Chamber of Commerce folks listening. How can they help you?
Well, I think that the local chambers of commerce are the ones who are closest to their members' needs and concerns. They tend to be less ideologically driven than some of these big state or national business organizations. And they need to, and I'm sure they're already doing this, listen to what their members are saying, listen to what businesses in their community are saying about healthcare, and get engaged in the debate. Because, I mean, as I said, as our polling shows across the country in every kind of state, there is tremendous concern and there's tremendous willingness among small businesses to step up and be part of the solution. So we would, and by the way, we have talked to many chambers of commerce all over the country who are in agreement with this and are actively engaged in this. So we would urge more of them to do so.
Yeah, I personally think the climate is right now. I think the costs are getting so far out of hand that even people who just a few years ago were ideologically opposed to some type of government intervention are saying, hey, we just can't sustain.
Absolutely. The time is now. I mean, there's absolutely no way we can keep waiting on this. And there is political will. There's leadership. There's tremendous commitment. I mean, I've got to really commend everybody in Washington on this debate. They've been working tirelessly. They've stayed basically on schedule. The various committees in the Senate and the House are working like crazy to come out with proposals. The three major committees in the House just came out with a joint proposal draft yesterday. I'm actually going to be testifying on that next week in Congress. And, we think that the will's there, the energy's there, and the desire's there. And as you suggest, some of the groups that in the past have been less willing to engage in this realize this is not a sustainable system anymore, and they want something to happen.
We got about 30 seconds left. I'd like a prediction. You know, how do you see this playing out in the coming months?
I'm optimistic. I think it's. I think we've got a confluence of need and political will and political structure and leadership in Washington now, and I'm optimistic that we're going to have something pretty comprehensive sometime this fall.
I hope you're right, John. Smallbusinessmajority.org is the website. Tons of information there if you want to get involved with their group. John, I appreciate you taking time for us.
Good chatting with you, Rick. Thank you.
Yeah, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
When the poor getting health care is too damn hard, we're right here in our backyard. Enough of Mr. Jones and Mrs. Now. We won't mess no health care now. We won't mess no health care. Now.
back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-877-960-0960. Your thoughts, your comments, what's on your mind. This healthcare thing, big issue. This is really the issue of our time.
The issue is really heating up in the next couple of weeks. It's going to be crucial, and what's really encouraging is that more and more small business are coming out and saying, look, the system is unattainable. We need the government option. We need to have insurance companies precluded from eliminating people because of pre-existing conditions, and we are willing to share in that cost. Now, we can argue, and we probably would, with that point as to what does that mean, shared cost, but at least the fact that they're coming out and they're advocating a government program when some of the Democrats are actually opposing that is encouraging. And then we're gonna have a doctor on later on the show. If you really talk to these doctors, if you really talk to the rank and file doctors, the vast majority of them realize that we need health care reform, and most of them will say, hey, I have no problem with the national health care program.
And you know, one of the things that's broken in our system is if you own a small business and you have like 5 or 6 employees and you go to buy health insurance and one of your employees gets sick, there go your rates. I mean, it's one of those things that's just mind-boggling. And, you know, they do have small business association buying groups and these pools that they're already talking about. But I got to tell you, if I'm running a small business, the last thing I have time for is worrying about filling out insurance forms and negotiating with insurance salespeople. It's just a hassle, especially if you are, I mean, if you're really just struggling to get by.
Isn't it ironic that some of the Republicans are grasping onto anything short of a government program? They're talking about pools, the power of a pool.
Well, they understand.
To drive down costs, but yet they opposed it when it came to Medicare about 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, but here's
prescription
the thing.
Drugs.
Here's what they understand. Here's what they understand. They understand that if there is another Social Security-like program that is wildly popular, and the American people say, hey, our government can do something, and our government can make our lives better, that the Republican Party is extinct from the landscape, the political landscape. They understand that. And you can do your funny face all you want. The reality is they have put their stake on the claim that government intervention is a failure. And look what they've done. I mean, they have done the best that they can do to destroy our government by underfunding it, by putting people in charge of positions that have no clue what they're doing. Hello, Michael Brown. A lot of this stuff. They have staked their political fate on the failure of our government. Let's take a quick call. We got Anthony on line one. How you doing today, Anthony?
Fine, sir. I was just wanted to say about this with small business. The reason some people that might have the American get up and go to start a small business nowadays won't do it is because we have to worry about health care for our employees.
Exactly.
And the thing of it is when you first start out, sir, it's just like your employees are your coworkers because you still have to get out there and work with them.
Well, it's
so
not even
gonna be, so I'm going to be face-to-face with you doing, you know, what I do, like directing traffic or making sure nobody breaks into a building or whatnot, where you can look right over at me and go, Anthony, excuse the example, but, you know, one of my sons needs, health care or whatever, what are you going to do about it? Well, you see, that's personal right there. It's not like I'm some kind of a big corporation
right.
Where am I, you know.
Well, it's not even that. It's not even
Anderson,
that.
Anderson, Anderson, look at my secretary, comes in and goes, Rick Smith on line one, and I can just go, well, I'm too busy to talk to him.
Right. It's not only that, Anthony. The fact that you, as a business owner.
It's a small part of it, but it's you know, it would be a lot easier. These talking head pundits are always saying, well, you know, people don't have no get up and go how no more. Well, it would be a lot easier if the government would work with us somehow on it.
I agree, but here's the thing.
And other things, and then we would get some get up and know how. Maybe we could get the kind of America that they're always talking about, that once in a while we can get it back together again if the people would stop just wanting to be greedy and put all the money in their own pockets and do something to help the small guy. We could both work together and they could get the kind of America that they want again.
I absolutely agree. And the reality is that if we shore up the bottom, we allow the people at the bottom to rise up, it will eventually rise the people at the top as well. It's a good point, Anthony. Thanks so much. I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
You know, and he makes a point, and we've talked about this before. And like he said, you know, you own a business. It's the guy next to you that works for you. You know, there's going to be some tension there. And even beyond that, a guy who's going to start his own business, he's got to worry about his own family. And that's the point I was trying to make. He's got to worry about, I would love to start my own small business, but I have three children that I have to worry about getting health insurance for. And I think a lot of people are like that, Jake. Anyway, let's quick run through some.
If I could just take a second and clarify my reaction to what you said. I don't know that you should ever say extinct, but without question, Rick, if Obama's successful in health care reform or labor law reform, perhaps doing something about the bad aspects of free trade, depending on the conduct of the Republican Party, they could solidify their position truly as a minority party far in the future. That's absolutely correct. I agree with that.
Basically making them extinct.
I don't know. They would be very ineffective politically. There are some positive effects. The wheels of government, sometimes they turn also slowly, but they're starting to turn. They're starting to turn. And just like a snowball going down a hill, it's gaining momentum. Some good reports coming out of the Senate, from the Senate Committee on Health, Education, and Pensions, called the HELP Committee. They've come out with their report. They are advocating a guarantee to the issue of policy. They are guaranteed a public health plan. They are advocating a public health plan and employer mandate. They are, as I said, advocating a guaranteed issue of policy that would disallow the refusal of coverage for pre-existing conditions, which we all agree on. On retiree issues, there is a medical buy-in for those 55 to 64. Very important. We talked about that. In the House, there's three key committees, all chaired by Democrats. They have come out and unanimously advocated a government option, which is absolutely great to hear. On Medicare, quickly, I want to go over this. They're advocating eliminating or minimizing the donut hole coverage gap, improving low-income access, leaving out Part D means testing, and eliminating Medicare Advantage overpayments. So there's some real good news coming out of the Senate and the House. Now, on the other side, we talked about our favorite, and I say that facetiously, senator in the Senate, Senator Baucus, whose committee, and get some of these proposals that are coming out of his committee. These are some of the things coming out of his committee, and thank God he's only one of three or four committees in the Senate. They are proposing lower the Medicaid coverage from 150% to 100% of the federal poverty level, 133% for kids and pregnant women. He wants to subsidies stop at 300% of the poverty line, which was 400%. No public option was mentioned at all in the recommendations. Insurance exchanges at the state level. Under their plan, you must buy insurance unless it costs more than 50% of your income. And here's
more than 50% of your
15,
income?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm glad you clarified that. 15%. They're going to fine you if you don't buy insurance unless you're below the federal poverty level. Now, there's an interesting concept. They're going to fine you.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, we can talk about this, but doesn't there have to be some stick in this plan to make sure that everybody is involved in it? I mean, if you don't have everybody in the system, if you don't have everybody contributing, are you not then underfunding it and eventually going to have to take care of those people who have dropped out?
And there's one of the shortfalls of keeping the system the way it is, or even, you know, even allowing people to keep their insurance. If we had a single payer, you wouldn't even have that problem. But I understand what you're saying. You're right. There has to be a mechanism. But for the most part, what's coming out of Baucus's committee, absolutely is horrible.
I mean, you look at Baucus, and here again, another conservative Democrat, which is why I really don't make a distinction between conservative Republicans and conservative Democrats. They're just conservatives. And they're the reason that this country is in the mess that it's in. Because honestly and truthfully, the conservatives have really divided the Democratic Party. There should be no question that we should have single-payer health care. The Democratic Party controls the mechanisms of government. But, you know, like good Democrats, they have circled the wagons, and they are now massacring everyone within the circle. I mean, it's insane.
You're absolutely right. We talked about doctors' groups. We talked about a couple months ago, and in the chambers of Backus's committee where three organizations of physicians came and wanted to testify about the advantages of single payer, and they were denied and they were arrested. My point is that you find more and more doctors' organizations, not the AMA, but more and more doctors' organizations who are coming out and saying we absolutely need the government option. What a lot of people don't realize, and AMA is still very powerful. It's still one of the most powerful lobbies on Capitol Hill because of, you guessed it, money.
Sure.
And the interest to back their positions. Now, the interesting thing is, Rick, they only represent 20% of the doctors in this country.
And they didn't bother to poll the 20%.
Oops.
And because they know. I mean, realistically speaking, most of the doctors that I've spoken to say, look, we got into the healthcare field. We became doctors to help people, to heal the sick, to help people live better, more productive lives. We didn't get into the medical profession to become bureaucrats. We didn't get into this to be billing agents. We didn't get into this to be collection agents. We got into this line of work because we want to help people. And, you know, it just makes such sense to completely wipe out that middle layer known as health insurance and just have one person pay the bill. It's paid. You go to the doctor, it's paid. And this nonsense, and I know this nonsense that somehow if it doesn't cost you anything out of your pocket at this moment, you're going to go to the doctor all the time. That is just utter nonsense. I got to tell you, personally, my wife has to guilt me into going to the doctor. And I have got the best health care money can buy. It doesn't cost me a dime. I don't go every chance I get. My wife has got to beg, borrow, and steal, guilt me into it.
Some of the old-timers, Rick, you made a good point. Some of the old-timers, my parents were probably in this category. They would feel ashamed if they felt that there was a handout because they were taught you work hard, you pay your own way, you pay all your bills, and the perception, if the perception is that it's free and you're taking advantage, many people won't go. Why do you think a lot of people don't go to the hospital waiting room? Because they're ashamed.
But it's not free. I mean, we've got to get away from this. It's free. We pay for it. We're paying for it through our taxes. We're paying for it through public investment. There's Absolutely. Nothing free about it.
Our society, in many ways, is paying a huge price, huge price for ineffective health care. Anyway.
Well, let's pick this up on the other side of the break. Let's take a break right here. We're going to take a break. 1-877-960-0960.
Yes, back in 1932, those leaders were willing to let the workers starve if they could not get a job. Back in 1932, they were not willing to guarantee collective bargaining. Back in 1932, they met the demands of unemployed veterans with troops and tanks.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-877-960-0960. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. You know, I don't know if you saw this. One of the guy who's running for, I think it's state's attorney general there in Virginia, has come out and said, I am not in favor of collective bargaining for public employees or private sector employees. And it's one of those things that really kind of makes you understand that there's a dividing line in this country and that the Republicans have been on the side of big business for so long that they're not willing to concede anything to the working people of this country, that they view working people as just another tool in the box to be used and discarded at will. And one of the things that I honestly believe is collective bargaining in this country created the largest middle class in the history of the world. The fact that workers could come together and say, hey, you know what? I'd like some of the profits of the products that I'm producing. I'd like some of that. And I'd like health care. I'd like a pension. I think that's a good thing. And the Republicans, and you know, I had a conversation this week with a friend who said, you know, when did you see it all go wrong? And I said, my grandfather actually brought it up. He said, during the 70s, when big business owners would go to their fancy restaurants and they would go to the opera or to the theater, and they turned next to them and saw a filthy factory worker sitting in the same seat, eating off the same plates, driving the same kind of car. That was the end of the middle class experience in this country. They then took all of their wealth collectively and began funding think tanks and began backing politicians like Ronald Reagan, who pursued policies that would destroy that strong, vibrant, growing, wealthy middle class. And health care, this has been the last front of that middle class uprising of the 40s, 50s, 60s, and into the 70s. The fact that workers had security in health care. They've broken our pensions. I mean, the 80s, they went through, they broke our pension system. Here's 401Ks. You're going to be a millionaire. And stupid working people go, oh, yep, I just might be. And now you look at what happened. 401K is actually 200.5. Half your money's gone. People over 55 are never going to recoup the losses. Now that next front in destroying the middle class is health care. And they've been slowly taking that away. Because, listen, folks, you cannot lead a middle-class existence in this country without health care. You just can't do it.
Well, what they were real good at, Rick, they couched the conservative revolution, which was backed in large part by the corporate interest. It was about power and greed and money, you're right. But they couched it in freedom, they couched it in less government. And they were successful. You came off about 30, 40 years of, you know, FDR's programs, and perhaps there were some excesses, and they took advantage of it. And they fooled, exactly right, Rick, they fooled a lot of working people. And they not only fooled them, worse than that, they got them to vote against their own self-interest.
You know, I look at the fact that, and my grandfather was right, you know, and you don't like to think that someone with a fourth, fifth grade education is smarter than the average person. But my grandfather didn't go much past the fifth grade. And he was not a dumb man. He understood human nature. He understood, he was a guy who was street smart. He got it. And he always said, you know, if a rich guy's willing to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better dig a little deeper in yours to get it. Spend two to get it. And, you know, to me, that really speaks volumes to what we need to be doing in this country. And Bill George made an interesting point. The healthcare industry is spending billions of dollars. Labor doesn't have that money.
$2 billion.
Labor just doesn't have that money.
That's incredible.
Working people don't have that money. They're struggling to keep food on the table. They're struggling to keep the roof over their children's head because wages have been going down. They've destroyed your pensions. They're taking away health care. Now is not the time to be divided on this issue. Now is precisely the time where the working people of this country, the 62%, the majority in this country who are the working class, need to unite and say, look, we want to make sure that when we go to work every day, we're covered. We want to make sure that when we get sick, these greedy criminal insurance companies don't go, oh, you didn't tell us about that hangnail you had 28 years ago. We're going to drop you. I'm telling you, it's insane.
Truth is, Rick, well, we talked about it numerous times, there's a direct correlation between union numbers going down, union's political power, and the ascendancy of the corporatocracy that we have now.
Now, I just got an email. Guy writes me, he goes, well, is there any situation where you see private health insurance being beneficial? Yes, I do. I think you need to have a private something there. I think there needs to be competition. And in other countries, you go around the globe, other countries do have private entities that help push things along. That you know, you may not have the public plan may not be the John McCain gold-plated plan, but the private industry will then supplement. And it's just like Medicare. I mean, most people, my grandmother has Medicare, and she supplements that with a supplemental policy.
My mother did the same thing.
I don't have a problem with that. Yep. There is a need for it.
And if we create a system where it actually does create competition, that can be good.
Absolutely.
If it's true competition, not the pseudo competition we talked about today. Anyway, quickly, I know we're pressed for time here. Rick, the Alliance for Retired Americans, which, by the way, you know, is pretty much labor-dominated retiree group. They've had their legislative conference, and they've come out with some proposals on health care, which dramatically impacts on their members. I want to quick go over their recommendations. Ending taxpayer subsidies to private insurance companies that run Medicare Advantage programs. Amen. Maintaining tax-free health care benefits. I think we can all, everybody in labor agrees with that. I think it would be a huge mistake. Repealing the prohibition against Medicare negotiating volume discounts. This has cost senior citizens hundreds of millions, and I'm being conservative, probably billions in the last 4 or 5 years since it was passed. If you don't think these interests are powerful, the pharmaceuticals actually had language inserted which prohibited organizations from buying in volume, such as, you know, what we do in the PACE when we procure drugs for senior citizens that are really in need of it. It prohibited anything like that. It was a total ripoff. The Republicans control Congress. George Bush signed it, and we need to prohibit that in the system if we're going to have an effective, cost-effective system. Creating the opportunity for early retirees to buy into Medicare. We talked about that. I think we can all agree that would be a huge positive, from a minimum of 55 to 64. Establishing a public plan option to compete against private insurance. We all agree with that. And they went a step further. And this is the next step in healthcare. Long-term healthcare. And they are advocating some changes. There's a bill been introduced by Senator Kennedy in the Senate, and Representative Frank Pallone and John Dingell in the House, that would create an insurance program for adults who become functionally disabled. And that's the next step. And to be honest, that's going to be a tough nut to crack because we're talking about a lot of money. But the truth is, those baby boomers, those huge influx of numbers, are now starting to retire. And one way or another, we're going to have to address that. And we need to, at the very least, start talking about it. And I was glad to see the input.
Well, you know, let's go back to this for a second, because you bring up, and we talked about it with Bill for a minute, about lowering the Medicare age. I haven't really thought this totally through, but part of me is hesitant, because I think then you're taking more of the people who are moving towards ill health onto the public system. And part of me thinks that is a poison pill. The only way that a public system is going to work, in my opinion, is that if you have everybody in the pool. Because we know. I mean, everyone knows. You use your health care the most, first 5 years, last 5 years. If you take on both of those groups without that 90% in the middle, without those years in the middle, there's a problem. And to me, it just seems to me to be a poison pill that will eventually take the system down, because you're putting more people into the pool who are using that last 5 years. Just my thoughts. That's why I think there has to be just one big buying pool. The economy of scale that they love to say. That's just how I see it.
So what you're saying is that the part of that would be a negative. Perhaps you're right, but I think it's something that we need to talk about, Rick.
Well, here again, I mean, it's another one of these patchworks. You know, we're tinkering around the edges. And I got to tell you, right now is not a time to tinker.
Well, you heard Bill George, and Bill George would know. He's saying right now, single payer, the chances of getting it passed aren't very good, unfortunately. You and I would both advocate that, although we have a few misgivings, but in the general picture, we're saying, let's take that leap, let's do it, let's provide health care for all, period.
Yeah, I'm not saying a single payer plan is going to work, and I've said that all along. But at least the public option. You have to have everybody involved. Everybody has to be insured, so that you are not using the emergency room as your primary care physician. But beyond that, you need all of those people into the pool to make up for the people who are using health care. And that's where you get the libertarians going, well, why should I have to pay for anybody? Because someday you're going to need it. And that's the trade-off. You're paying for it now so that when you need it, it's going to be there.
Well, again, the devil's in the details, Rick. It says make available. Now, that you know, obviously there's going to be some guidelines. I don't think it's going to be open to anybody who wants to join.
All right. Anyway. Let's wrap this up. Take a quick break. We're going to wrap this up in the next segment. We'll pick up on the other side.
Well, I can do it tomorrow.
Good evening, folks. It's Joe Berry, live here for News on the Air, sponsored by Capital Blue Cross. I'm here to report that a medical breakthrough has occurred early this morning in England. It seems an electrical engineer by the name of Godfrey Newbold Hounsfield has performed the world's first computed axial tomography scan, or as he calls it, a CAT scan. Hounsfield has proven that it's possible to take three-dimensional x-rays to properly locate tumors and cysts and such. Today, September 19, 1971, he has successfully located a brain cyst on a patient in Wimbledon, England. It is truly a medical marvel. That's all from me, Joe Berry. Have a good night, and thank you for listening in.
70 years of Capital Blue Cross. There for the first CAT scan, there for many more. Then, now, always. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. You can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Fred just sent me an email saying that it's important for people to know that the new law is scheduled to be passed before Congress recesses in August. He writes, we cannot allow that to happen. We need the lawmakers to go home, face their constituents on the health care issue. What do you think about that? There's part of me that goes, you know, I want to get something done. But there's another part of me that says, you know, if your representative has to come and stand before you and listen to you go on and on during the recess, we might get something better on the other side. What do you think?
Well, but sometimes you need a reality check, Rick. I mean, it's you and I both know it's easy to live in that bubble in Washington, inside the Beltway mentality.
That's true. We can scratch another name off the long list of Republicans with their eye on the White House in 2012. Nevada Republican Senator John Ensign, another one of these born-again family values Christians. Evidently, he was laying his healing hands upon a married woman. The married senator was laying his healing hands upon the married woman who worked for his campaign. Now, let's remember, Mr. Family Values himself, he's a member of one of these groups called Promise Keepers. Have you seen this? This Christian evangelical ministry that emphasizes family values. Another one of those ridiculous groups who everybody pretty much knows is a sham. But what I love is I love the reaction that Republicans have given him. Senator Jim DeMint, Republican from South Carolina. People don't like hypocrites, so we've got to live up to what we've been saying. But Senator Ensign should not resign. Senator Lindsey Graham, I think he'll be welcomed back by his colleagues and go back to being a good senator. who said not only should Ensign not resign from the Senate, he shouldn't have to resign from his leadership position either. Graham even went so far to say that most people, most Americans, look at this as a personal situation. Senator John Cornyn from Texas, Republican, says, quote, he apologized to his constituents and his colleagues and acknowledged a grave error, but he shouldn't have to resign. Saxby Chambliss, Republican from Georgia, said Ensign's got to get his personal life in order first, and that comes first, but, of course, he shouldn't resign. Are we seeing a pattern here, Jake? You got David Vitter, shouldn't have to resign. Let's go into our Wayback Machine. Let's set the dial for 2007. And look, folks, I know, we're Americans. I know. We're historically challenged. They've been putting an amnesiac in our water. But wasn't it Ensign who pushed for Lusty Larry Craig to have to step down from his little bathroom fling? And, let me get this. And what is this? Most Americans look at this as a personal situation. Where the heck are these hypocrites? Where the heck are these hypocrites? When they spent 2 years skewering Bill Clinton while Al Qaeda was growing stronger. Absolutely, just amazing. And I go back to the Mark Twain quote. What a hell of heaven it will be when they get all these hypocrites assembled there.
Well, we talked about this many times. Really, the bottom line is, they're correct in one, in a sense. It's a private matter. However, and this is a big however, if you got elected on family values and moral values and being true to your spouse, and then you find later that it was all a pack of lies and you're a big fat hypocrite, that then becomes a political issue.
Yep.
That's the difference. Everybody sins. We're all sinners.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up.
If you make a political career out of speaking out against exactly what you did, it then becomes a political issue.
Now, here again. And I've taken a lot of heat over saying this, which is why I'm going to say it again. The exact same people who complain that the Ten Commandments are not plastered on every wall and every schoolhouse and on every corner are the same repressed, self-loathing type people who turn into serial killers and John Ensign-like hypocrites. I mean, you go back to 1999, September 30th, Washington Post reports, and this is a beautiful quote, you're going to love this. Christian politicians and evangelical leaders commonly follow an unspoken rule not to meet behind closed doors with women, staff members, or travel alone with them. John Ensign, who is running for the Senate in Nevada, will not be alone in a car with a woman. A car, no. But a sleazy hotel would be just fine. Should he resign?
Rick, you're being unfair. It could have been a high price, though.
Yeah, well, should he resign? No. Do I care that he was fiddling around with this woman? None of my business. None of my business at all. Do I care he's pushing a kind of sexually pent-up, repressive legislative agenda to please the insane kooks who buy into his rhetoric? Yes. And, you see, let me give you a little lesson on hypocrisy. And I don't care what consenting adults do in their privacy of their four walls with consenting adults. This crap doesn't belong on the front page of newspapers or headlines of news programs. It's a diversion from what's really important. That said, I bring this up because Mr. Holier Than Thou, or should I say Hornier Than Thou, has painted himself into this corner. And it's important to point out the hypocrisy when it exists. And it exists big time in the Republican Party. That's why I bring it up. Do I care? No. Not at all. Just like I didn't care when Bill Clinton had his little tryst. Didn't care when Larry Craig had his. Don't care that Senator David Vitter wears diapers. Don't care. You know, if that gets you through the day, if you need to wear diapers and have someone wipe your behind to get you to be a decent human being, I'm all for it. I'll buy you a box of Pampers. But the reality, folks, is we should not have to put up with these kind of politicians, these hypocritical nitwits who have preached to us, yet they don't live up to their preaching. I guess it takes me back to what my mother always said. Do as I say, not as I do. I want politicians who are going to do as they say, and we're going to follow what they do. Anyway, we're going to be back here tomorrow. Big show tomorrow. We're going to be talking with a doctor from the UK. And we're going to dispel all of the myths, all of the nonsense. We're going to talk to Sarah Robertson from Campaign for America's Future and Sandra Strauss about the religious angle of health care. We'll see you tomorrow. Remember, check out the website.
Through a hole in the air, from whose nest Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field, but this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Tune in every Saturday and Sunday from noon till 2 p.m. on WHYL AM 960. Or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Oh, there's no hurry. Tonight you'll be at Rick's. Everybody comes to Rick's.
I've already heard about this cafe and also about Mr. Rick himself.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world, she walks into mine. What's that you're playing?
Oh, just a little something on my own.
Oh, stop it. You know what I want to hear.
No, I don't.
You played it for her, you play it for me.
Well, I don't think I can remember.
If she can stand it, I can. Play it.
there, and welcome to Rick's Place. We are open and ready. Here's the proprietor of Rick's and Horn's psychotherapist, Rick Goodner.
Howdy, Rangers. This is Rick Goodner. You're at Rick's Place here on Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. Oh, my goodness, what a tough week it's been. Kind of fun, but tough anyway. You guys just belly on up to the bar. Ladies, sit over there at that table. Take it easy. And you sit over there in the back where you're at. Keep watching people as they come in. I know what you're doing. You're dissecting everything that's going on. You're looking at the people coming in. You're listening to what's being said. And you're studying people. Rick's Place is the best place to do that because we have all kinds here. And some of the kinds that we're going to have today are some Republican nuts. Some cool stuff. I'll have a few clips for you today, and then we'll do a little bit of commentary on them, and we'll go from there. But before that, a little housekeeping. This is listener-supported radio. Don't forget to make your contributions. You don't. I promise you, one day you're going to wake up, and there will be no head-on radio. Bob receives no support from any left-wing organizations. None of the liberal rich people give a penny, so if you want to keep this going, you got to make your contributions. Let's keep things moving, and moving we are. Remember, it was the Horn who has pointed out things before any of the other systems picked them up, before the blogs, before any of the so-called liberal, I'm sorry, they are called progressive radio stations, picked up information. So if you want to get up-to-date stuff, you have to get it here. If you want to get unfiltered and maybe a little bit of raving, get it from me because I'm completely unfiltered and I do rave. It's that divine insanity that I have, too. I love it. Today's going to be a bit of potpourri. We're going to look at a little bit of this and a little bit of that. I don't think I'll give you a recipe like I did once before, but, we may even talk about a little bit of food. I promise you there'll be plenty of food for thought. And, you know, we have the thrashing around of people who are scared to death, the Republicans. Their party is completely falling apart. Oink, oink. Excuse me. Got a little cough there. Anyway. They're still thrashing about. They're scared to death. They don't know for sure what they're going to do. And so they're going back to their old playbook that's, you know, worked for them before, back when insanity completely went through this place. And they're kind of working on that. They're scared to death of prosecution for their crimes. They really are. And, of course, they're coming out, like I talked about last week, and saying stuff like, well, the Democrats were involved, too. It's their fault. They were involved. But not in a way that you said, John Cornyn. The way they were involved was they did not impeach Bush. They did not start investigations. They did not start the criminal procedures that needed to be done to clean up you stupid, crooked, horrible people. So now, you conservatives, you retardicans are thrashing about trying to prove to everybody that everything's good. And it's kind of working. I mean, we've got polls showing that 60% of the people in America do not want prosecution of the torturers. They don't. Nor the people who wrote the memos. They don't. Nor do they want prosecution of Bush. Okay, let's take a look at that 60%. I broke down once before how we have in this country left-wing people and right-wing people. And then everything we have in the center are just spineless people who will go towards the direction that the wind's blowing. If the wind is blowing to the right, they're to the right. If it's blowing from the left, they're to the left. Because they have no internal convictions. Now, if you're looking at the solid Republicans in the Republican Party, you're looking at about 30% of the population who vote. So, half of that 60% are Republicans. The other half of the 60% are the middle-of-the-roaders, the people who were voting and supporting the Republican Party, the Fox watchers and listeners. And although they want the economy fixed by the Democrats, and although they want to make sure that they get to keep their job, thank you, Democrats, they still have this conservative mindset, which to me means we still have 30% of the population that needs to be bitch slapped. Sorry, guys, just my way of looking at things. Because they haven't yet had it processed through their little minds that they have been voting against their own best interests. And part of the proof is that still, those 30% do not want any retribution for those criminal, horrible war criminals. And here is the main reason why. They were a part of it. You must understand that if you're to understand anything else in this world. That 30%, those middle-of-the-roaders, let it happen. They voted them in. They sat back and said, I'm closing my eyes. You do whatever you want. Just protect me. Just protect me. Protect me, please. Protect me. And so, the delusion, not even the illusion, but the delusion of protection was put forth. They bought into it, and they supported it. This makes them guilty. This makes them guilty. A little fact that I don't mind pointing out to every retardican that I know, and I do, and I really do quite often. So if there's an investigation, and if it shows that Bush and the Republican Party were guilty of torture, which they are, then that means the middle of the roaders, the people who bend whichever the way the wind's blowing, they're just as guilty as the Republican Party. They're just as guilty as the attorney you, Ivy. They're just as guilty as Condoleezza Rice. They're just as guilty as George Bush. They're just as guilty of the rank and file CIA members who actually did the torturing. So no, they don't want an investigation because it's going to show their guilt. So it must be forced upon them. And when it happens, they are going to start running for the hills. Oh, I was a Republican. I didn't have anything to do with that. I never voted for him. If they actually have trials going, the middle of the roaders are going to back off, and suddenly there's going to be nobody that ever voted for a Republican. It's going to be an anomaly. No one's going to be able to understand it. How did Bush get in office? How did the Republicans take control of the Supreme Court? How did the Republicans take control of Congress if no one voted for them? It's kind of the reverse of after World War II in France. Suddenly, every Frenchman was in the resistance. Every one of them. None of them collaborated with the Germans. They were all in the resistance. Well, the fact of the matter is, if all the French citizens were in the resistance, the Nazis could not have stayed in France. They could not have done it. Bring that forward, because I am a student of history. Bring that forward to today. If all of the people who are now denying that they voted for George Bush really did not vote for George Bush and the Retardicans, Bush would not have got into office. Bush would not have got into office. Neither would the Republicans have taken over both houses of Congress. It's a simple fact. So how did the retardican leadership get these middle-of-the-roaders to vote for them? Well, they scared them to death. And now they're starting to do it again. There is this most disgraceful, most dishonest, most horrid video that the House Republicans have put out. And I'm going to play for you in a second. Listen to the scary music in the background. I'm sorry you can't see the images, but go on YouTube and look it up. It's there. They put out a video that is showing all these horrifying things. They even have pictures of 9/11 in it. They have a few more pictures. They have Obama giving the ghetto handshake to Chavez. They have Obama bowing to the Saudi prince. They have pictures of Obama with the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. Ooh, they're brown people. Let's all be afraid. Let's be afraid. Let's be afraid. God. They're honorable congressmen, and they're making them out to be something to be afraid of. Just like Fox News is now running these stupid so-called news saying that this is some kind of Mexican flu that was brought over here, and it's because our borders are porous and people are coming in. They missed the fact that the flu was first brought to this country by American citizens, members of a church school who went to Cancun for a holiday, and they brought it back. But these homophobic, xenophobic, freedom phobic fools will put up anything they can to scare these spineless creatures in the middle. That's what they're doing, and they're doing it again. I want you to listen to this. I may say a few words after, and I know you'll probably hear me retching here in a bit because I'll be throwing up watching this garbage again, but this is what they do. This is what they do, and it works. It works. Give a good listen.
What is the administration's overarching plan to take on the terrorist threat and to keep America safe?
President Obama's decision to close Guantanamo Bay has ignited a debate, especially over the issue of where to put those prisoners.
The real question that we now face is, what is President Obama's strategy to confront this threat from radical jihadists?
Teaching our enemies our armaments, by taking techniques off the table, we have made it more difficult in a whole host of circumstances I can imagine, more difficult for CIA officers to defend the nation.
His own director of national intelligence, Dennis Blair, released this two-page memo in which basically he privately distributed to intelligence officials. Said in this two-page memo, quote, high-value information came from interrogations in which those methods were used and provided a deeper understanding of the Al-Qaeda organization that was attacking this country.
Did that scare you? Did that make you pee your pants? Well, if it didn't, congratulations. You're not a retardican, and you're not a middle-of-the-road, spineless, scared rabbit. That was garbage, but it's going to work. It's going to work. It's going to work. It's going to work. The images they put in there, my goodness, Obama's making you unsafe. Obama's going to get you killed. On Huffington Post, I have a connection to my Facebook. And whenever I make a comment, it sends it directly over to Rick Goodner Facebook. So you can always read my comments there. But
one of the things that I thought of when I was listening to that garbage was that it really works because 21% of the people in America are cowards. Yellow belly cowards. They would fall on their knees to any dictator that promised not to hurt them, that promised to take care of them. And they are scared to death of everything in life. And when the Republicans put out garbage like this, it scares them even more deeply. This is a sad state of affairs in America, where you have 20% of the voters in America who are cowards, blazing cowards, scared to move, scared to death. And I'm going to be honest with you guys, the only reason why they're supporting the Democrats at this point is because they're more afraid of the fact that they are going to go broke because of the retardicans and the conservative mindset than they are of terrorists at this moment. That's going to change. When things start to get good, they're going to go back to the conservatives because they are paranoid and afraid. And they want someone to protect them. The statement I made in Huffington Post is, and I really believe it, that the Republicans cannot wait for another terrorist attack. They're praying for it. No, don't give me this crap about Republicans are good Americans. They wouldn't want other Americans to die just for their political party. Well, that's bullshit. If you believe it, you're a moron. They want to win and they want to control no matter if you die. They want another attack on the mainland. And they want it under Obama. And they want this 21% of cowards to come running to them and put them back into power. They're expecting it. They're praying to their God for it. They want us to get hit. They want 3,000 more Americans to die. They want it. You're a fool if you don't believe it. They want it, and they want to get back in power that way. That's why they keep hanging on to this stupid system that they have. Because when, if God helps them, and we do get hit, the 21% in the middle will run back to them. And they will. They will. And then the retardicans start saying, well, we told you so, we told you so, we got to torture. We got to be monsters. Okay, it's okay. Yeah, go ahead and torture them. I don't care. Just don't let me get hurt. Please don't let me get hurt. You go ahead and torture them, you kill them. Whatever it takes, just don't let me get hurt. I can abide by a lot of stuff in the world. I take a lot of garbage in the world. But the one thing, the only thing, that I absolutely will not condone in front of me or around me is cowardliness. There isn't a worse creature in the world than a coward. If you are so afraid that you are going to personally get hurt, that you will give up every liberty guaranteed by your liberal founding fathers, you don't deserve that liberty. Nor do you deserve that protection. If we have to make ourselves into monsters, if we have to make ourselves as bad as the terrorists, we're not in a good place. I remember once my mother saying something about a story she was reading, and she just looked up from it and says, a brave person dies once, but a coward seems to die a thousand deaths. Well, she was a genius. I was a little kid. I could take that in, and I thought, she's right. My mother is the most intelligent person in the world. She came up with the truest statement in the world. A brave person dies once, but a coward dies a thousand deaths. Because every time they're afraid, they die a little bit. Everybody should think their mother is a genius, by the way. And even though I found out years later that she was just repeating an old saying that she heard before, she's still a genius to have said it. I cannot abide a coward. No one enjoys pain, but if you're afraid of pain and you're willing to give up everything to stop pain, you don't deserve the lack of pain. If you are a coward and you're willing to give up all your freedoms to be protected, you don't deserve freedom. If you think because you are such a coward that America should be monsters and torture and abuse, you don't deserve to be an American. Got that, middle of the roaders? Do you understand what I'm saying? You have no place in America, the home of the brave, if you're such a coward. That I do believe. Pure and simple. Now, my belief systems does not invade your belief systems, and you're allowed your own. That's what I put myself up as. That's what I make sure that I uphold in life. No matter how scary a situation is, I'm not going to be a coward in that situation. If I have to give up everything I own and everything I love, I can make that trade for freedom and justice and what is right in the world. If I must die so that you can keep your freedom, I will smile on the way towards my death. That's me. That's how I think. I cannot stand a coward. To be a coward is to be the most self-centered creature in the world. To be a coward makes you into a monster willing to destroy others for your own sense of safety. Being a coward turns the world over to monsters. And the world does abound with monsters everywhere. Everywhere. They are there. And they are evil. And they are going to make you think they're going to protect you as long as you let them do their evil stuff. But listen up, coward. Listen up, you retardican cowards. If you turn the monsters loose upon those that you are afraid are going to hurt you, you have just turned the monster loose upon yourself. If you fear so deeply for your life, liberty, and safety that you will let a monster do nefarious, horrible deeds to protect you, they will turn on you and do it to you. Every coward is constantly tortured. Every coward is constantly tortured. That gives you no right, retardican cowards, to choose to allow other humans to be tortured because you don't have the backbone, the strength, or the courage to not torture yourself with your own cowardliness. My point on the issue is simple. If you are a coward, do not suffer us your existence, you coward.
I tried to explain, but you don't listen to me. I tried to tell you, you refuse to care. I tried to show you, but your eyes don't glow. What it's gonna do, no results to you. You're nothing but cowards, and you got no pride at all.
Dies a thousand deaths. A soldier dies but once.
You're still, you live your life with a heavy span. You can't.
that be it, my little rangers? Cowards and liars. Liars and cowards. That's the whole kit and caboodle of the Retardican Party and the middle of the roaders, who can't make up their mind which way they want to lean, which way they want to bend their knees. They just go with the flow. Whichever the way the wind blows, that's the way they're going to kowtow to whomever scares them the most. I like the last part of the song, the very last word. Liars. Retardicans are liars. That's like saying snow is cold. I'm sure there's some relativity to that. Snow is cold. Snow is cold. There is a temperature that snow stays at, I guess. But snow is still snow. Cold is still cold. Liars are still liars. Republicans are still liars. All makes sense to me. All makes sense to me. Here's another thing that can make sense to you. Listen to this little statement from a friend of mine. It's from Elaine Decker. And she says, did you see her informative chemistry lesson on CO2 last week? Nice question. And then she asked, why do they even allow her to speak anymore? Wondering who she's talking about? Well, if you tuned in last week, you heard about the CO2 thing. But then she goes on, our friend, Ms. Decker, goes on and says, actually, perhaps we should be pushing a Pollan-Bachman 2012 ticket. And I replied, I love your thoughts on the Pollan-Bachman 2012 ticket. Nuts should be housed together. So I guess you don't have any problem at all understanding that the person that we're talking about is, of course, Michelle Bachman. She's done it again, guys. They let her in front of a microphone again. Oh, my God, this girl, she is so much fun. So dearly proud to have her around. I'm going to now let you listen to a little newscaster talking some to about what Miss Bachman said as of late, and let you hear Miss Bachman, and then the newscaster come back on and say her little bit, and then we will do our little dance of joy around her. Here we go.
And Congresswoman Michelle Bachman back in the news again for some controversial comments she made trying to suggest that there was a link between swine flu and Democrats.
I find it interesting that it was back in the 1970s that the swine flu broke out then under another Democrat president, Jimmy Carter, and I'm not blaming this on President Obama. I just think it's an interesting coincidence.
And that would be an interesting coincidence, except swine flu happened in 1976, and the president at the time was a Republican president, Gerald Ford.
Isn't that neat? What's really neat is that these fools are starting to get called on it. Not much. We must understand that. They're not being called much on it. But occasionally a newscaster will call the liars for their liars. And I guess with Bachman it's easy because she just ain't right. That girl just ain't right. So anyway, there you go. I'm not blaming Obama for this swine flu. But isn't it interesting? Isn't it interesting that Carter was president for the first swine flu and now Obama is? Let us think about that. Now, who is that going to? No, but for one thing, she's crazy. No two ways about it. And she gets all of her information from the information that Rush Limbaugh pulls out of his ass. So, you know, you can't expect much out of her. But there are people who listen to this stuff all the time who's going to go, oh, my God, yes, they're out to get us. It's obvious. Carter had swine flu in America, and now Obama, my God, and Obama doesn't have a birth certificate. Oh, my God. Yeah, it's just pure insanity, pure insanity. You know, back when I first started into this field, the only real paranoid insanity that I had to put up with was this constant idea from the right that the world was being controlled by Jews. Jews poisons the water well. Jews creates diseases. Jews has an international conspiracy to control your money. But now, thanks to Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, that bastard, Bill O'Reilly, Beck, and all the other crazy right-wing people and all of Fox News, they've got the Democrats as being the scapegoat for everything that went wrong. Well, as a newscaster pointed out rightly, it was Gerald Ford who was there. I remember standing in line and going and get my oink-oink shot with all the other Americans, which, by the way, we didn't have an outbreak. And there was people complaining after that, by the way. I went down, I got my shot, and then this pig flu didn't get anybody. It just didn't happen in America. And I'm over there going, well, and the problem is, well, I shouldn't have had to get the shot. Because no place in America did they have this flu going out and getting people. And I'd always say, do you think maybe the fact that everybody received the shots, and so they had an immunity against the flu, may have helped? Paranoid people have trouble with that kind of reasoning. But I think Stephen Colbert did it the best. He went back and he said, okay, yep, absolutely for sure. It was Carter's fault the first time, and it is now Obama's fault this time. And by obvious understanding of how things go, if a president is in control during the time of an outbreak of a pandemic, then obviously it's his fault. So he put up a little chart, and he showed Bush 2 and said, Bush 2, bird flu. Then he shows another little picture on the chart, Bush 2, SARS. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, and he goes through this little chart, and then he gets all the way to the back to Reagan. And he goes, Reagan, AIDS. So here you are with all these Republican presidents on this nice little chart, and these horrible diseases right next to them. So, obviously, if Carter, which wasn't there at the time, and Obama created the pig flu, then all of the horrible diseases that happened under Republicans had to be Republicans' fault, all the way to AIDS. Yes, even to AIDS. My. Hilarious. I didn't want to go through the whole thing. I want you to watch it. You can get this on fancast.com. Do a search for the Colbert Report. Get the one, I believe it's for 4:30:09, maybe 4:29:09, and watch it. It is absolutely hilarious. Which brings me to another issue. There's been a research done that shows that liberals tend to really enjoy Stephen Colbert. We enjoy his irony and sarcasm. We can see how he is making himself out to be like a Bill O'Reilly, pulling garbage out of his butt and feeding it to people. Now, Colbert does it very well. This guy is hilarious. And the research showed that when the liberals saw it, they thought it was funny. And they believed that he was making fun of conservatives. But the surprising part is that conservatives found Stephen Colbert to be funny, too. they found Stephen to be funny just as much as liberals. Now, here's the strange part. They believe that Colbert is using jokes and pretending that he is not conservative, all the while being conservative and making fun of liberal people by running down liberal people. In other words, they believe the stuff is true. They believe that Stephen Colbert is one of them, and he's using humor to slap around liberals. But that's not even logic. For one thing, for someone not to understand that, they could not understand the concept of irony, nor can they understand the concept of satire. Now, I have another little theory on that. The theory is that the right, the conservatives, the retardicans, have for so many years, so many years, 30 or more, been fed a steady diet of lies, which they believe. They sucked it in and said, "May I have more, please?" They took the steady diet of lies constantly in from the right. And now, when they hear someone who is pretending that he is a conservative, what they hear is what they already believe. When he says the most outrageous, crazy stuff in the world about liberals, they believe it because they have already been conditioned to believe it. Goes back to my book, The Fox Syndrome. Oh, God, I hate doing this all the time, but when you're right, you're right. I'm sorry, I was right, so I'm going to say it. When a person is in a relationship where there is a delusional person who is spouting the delusions constantly, a normal person can become psychotic. They can take on a mental disorder known as shared psychotic disorder. It's real. It exists. And in my book, The Fox Syndrome, I cover the possibility, no, the exact happening, that the Fox Syndrome is real. That people who listen, who have a steady diet of Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, that bastard, Bill O'Reilly, Beck, Laura Ingraham, all of them, Peggy Newman, that they are listening to delusional people and they are sharing their delusions. They don't see them as lies. Now, Al Franken says that they're just liars, and that's okay. I'm sure part of it is a lie. Maybe the beginning of it was a lie. But now I think these right-wingers actually believe some of what they say. And I know that they have convinced their listeners that what they're saying is true. Therefore, these delusional people are constantly talking to these right-wing morons, and they are creating a shared psychotic disorder. This is a real mental disorder related to, in this case, related to right-wing media, which I call the Fox Syndrome. Right-wing media-induced shared psychotic disorder. Every single week, I see it over and over and over. I feel vindicated. I feel like justice is finally served. No one's noticing it but me, but that's because my book was the worst-selling book in the entire world. Now, you people out there, whom I call the tens of people who listen to me, I have mentioned this over and over, and you know that there is such a psychotic disorder. They don't. They can't understand it. They can't get it through their head. It would create cognitive dissonance if they realized the truth. And we've already went through that, where they would use denial, which they are doing already, which is known as confirmational bias. They would use projection. They project their feelings on the commentators, and they use transference, where they transfer their hatred of someone good in their life upon liberals. Maybe a bit of Stockholm syndrome. Maybe they were abused physically, emotionally, sexually by some right-winger as a kid. And now they have developed a Stockholm syndrome where they have to go to Fox News and